Thank you. Thanks. Thanks to the organizers for inviting me here. It's a great pleasure always to be back at TI. And in particular, this time, I'm happy to talk about, you talk about the Java Lipschitz gravity. It was in 2009 when Peter put out his paper about this theory. We was here at PI, and with Jimmy and Laurent, we worked for a bit about this. Fortunately, we never published. But so this time, today I'm going to talk about work that I've done with Filippo Guarnieri, and was part of his PhD thesis. And as the title says, it's going to be a toy model, which actually Peter already introduced. I will be quite fast on the introduction part, and then I'll try to explain what we have actually done. So first of all, of course, the motivation. Peter had many other reasons to introduce this model, but for my interest, of course, comes from the quantum gravity side and of the idea of reconciling quantum field theory with gravity. And we have heard, actually, there is no problem with combining them into an effective field theory. We heard the talk by John. However, if you hope to go beyond, there are not so many possibilities. One, something to study safety. We heard, and this proposal by Peter is very interesting because you, by introducing a privileged role for time, you are able to construct a theory which is perturbatively renormalizable. And I think much of the interest that this generated was really motivated by this specific reason. And however, so there's been a huge interest in this one. This paper has about 900 citations, but there are, I think, almost no results about the normalization flow. I mean, very few. In particular, these two open questions, I think, are still there. And one is, does it really flow to GR in the infrared? And I think Frank will be talking about this. So that's one side in which there is some result from applying the FRG. And what I want to address here in this talk instead is the other question is about the UV. So is it really a good UV completion? And in particular, is it asymptotically free? Or do we need some asymptotic safety scenarios here? And in order to address this question, why there hasn't been much about this? Because it's very difficult. That's, we saw there are many couplings in the full theory. There's interactions are complicated. It's a difficult story. So that's why I will introduce a toy model. And so I will introduce a toy model with which we first try to get some understanding about the UV properties of this theory. And then I will illustrate this calculation we've done, which is a one-loop calculation. So standard one-loop perturbative quantization. And then I will conclude discussing some lessons from that. So here I can be fast. Peter already introduced everything. But I will just repeat some things because maybe I need them for notation, for emphasizing certain points. So one, so first of all, is heard this, so in the scalar case, when you have Z spatial derivatives, one interesting thing, I mean, one important aspect of the theory of the fixed point, of this Lipschitz fixed point, is that you have an anisotropic scale invariant. So if you scale X by the spatial coordinates by alpha, time, in order to have an invariant of this action, you need to scale time by alpha to the Z. And because of this, it is when you're close to this fixed point, it is useful to give anisotropic scaling dimension to space and time, and give in particular, if this is mass dimension, So length, dimension of length of your x, you give dimension of length to the z to time. And this means that the field has dimension d minus z half. In particular, if you choose z to be equal to the number of spatial dimensions d, so z equal d, you get a dimensionless field. And so interactions are, I mean, you build in renormalizable interactions. So when you apply so this to gravity, of course, you need to introduce a foliation. And so the general setup is you have a topology R times sigma with sigma some d-dimensional manifold. Use ADM variables, so laps, shift, and spatial metric. And because you want to have fundamental meaning for this foliation, you want to say the set of different of symmetries in your theory is going to be reduced to foliation preserving diffeomorphisms, which means that if for space you have the usual diffeomorphisms, which depend on some vector zeta I, which depends on x and t, for time you have just time reparallelization, so some function zeta which depends only on t. And the idea is to construct a theory of geometric dynamics which is invariant under this symmetry. So we saw it already. So you have a kinetic term like this with KJ is the extrinsic curvature, G, this is the Witt supermetric, which is used to contract the two extrinsic curvatures, but it's a deformed one with this parameter lambda, where here this is an important point, which is, so lambda equal one is the usual GR value. And what would be more important for this talk is that lambda equal one over D is a value at which you have an isotropic value invariance, meaning that if the spatial metric is scaled by a conformal factor e to the 2 omega, sorry, yeah, of x and t, say, here I forgot to put t, then the lapse, if you scale also the lapse as e to the d omega, or in this case, yeah, e to the d omega of x and t n, then you have this term is invariant. So then you have the potential, which as you heard already, there are two main versions. There's a projectable one where n is just a function of t, and then the action just takes the form of a usual gravity action, but in d dimension. And so for the potential, you can write all sorts of invariants and so on. In the non-projectable version, you have also this acceleration vector. And so you can write much more terms. So then in 3 plus 1 dimension, that needs to be at least 3. So you get a lot of terms and many couplings. And so the analysis is very difficult. One simplification would be to study the detailed balance case in which the potential is basically the square of equations of motion in one dimension less. But however, still, this is still complicated in 3 plus 1 dimension. So one thing that I'm going to look at instead is a simplification that already is there on the blackboard. So to look in less dimensions, it's in lower dimensions. This is already, it's a standard tricky, standard thing you do also in the classical case, in the isotropic case. And there's been a lot of work on 3D gravity, even though in that case there are no propagating degrees of freedom in 3D GR. Nevertheless, you can learn a lot of things there. In the case of HL gravity, there is far less works in lower dimensions. However, there's been, I mean, Peter already looked at that even before the 3 plus 1 paper studying quantum theory of membranes. With Johansson, we looked at 2 plus 1 case in the relation with CDT, especially the role of spectral dimension, comparing spectral dimension in the CDT and HR gravity. Sotirio and collaborators also looked at these lower dimensional models as playgrounds for classical dynamics. And yeah, the group of Carli, Joshua, and Peter have looked at the extension of CDT to mimic the full 2+1 dimensional HR gravity. And also Jan with Lisa and collaborators have looked at 1+1 dimensional model. We could, again, for comparison to CDT, and they showed that the quantum Hamiltonian is actually the same. So, so it's a useful playground in lower dimension for, particular for comparison to CDT, I think, as you just heard in the previous talk. And however, yeah, there isn't been much more, but the model is quite interesting because now if I will concentrate in 2+1 dimension, and so when you are in integral two, yeah, there is no wild tensor, the Ricci tensor is proportional to the Ricci scalar, and z equal two is sufficient for a normalizability. So you get a lot less terms. Nevertheless, the theory is still non-trivial because there is one scalar degree of freedom. So in a sense, I think it's a lower dimensional model, which is more interesting than the usual 3D GR, because you still have some local degrees of freedom, and you can it makes sense to do quantum field theory in the usual way. And so you see the projectile model is basically the action written there. Actually, I'm interested in mimicking Lorentz's signature, plus I might have a different choice of signs also because it doesn't really matter too much. As I said, there is only one scalar degree of freedom. There are no gravitons. So I chose a sign here, which is such that for lambda greater than 1/2, I have a positive kinetic term for the scalar mode. If you want lambda less than 1/2, you took just the opposite sign. And the thing to notice is that as I'm interested in the UV properties, it's useful to remember what Peter just said. So if I have T is dimension minus 2, then this kappa, this lambda, and this gamma are all dimensionless. The only dimensionful parameters are lambda, kind of the cosmological constant, and this C, which is the coupling of R. I remember that this is a projectile model, so N is just a function of time. So it goes out of the spatial integral, and that's just the Euler characteristic then. So this is a topological term. So
then it shouldn't enter any field equation, right?
Right. Right. So
I wanted to ask you in terms of time. So how could it, I mean, if it's topological, how could it enter a field equation?
Integral
of
spaces, a number.
Right,
but
you get the order number of
this
sphere, for example, which is not zero times the coupling. Well,
no, but if I think about
it, I
should be able to derive it just
from field equations, right? Yeah, I know. I mean, Friedman equation is just the constraint equation of.
So maybe we should talk about it a little bit because now I'm down. Also, that was not the variation respect to F then.
And you get the integral over scalar curvature over space, and that's the Euler number.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
It just sits there in the
equation. Anyway, I won't discuss classical things, so we can talk about it. Yeah, maybe we can get back to that later. Because, yes.
Let me ask a dumb question. This model just has one scalar degree of freedom.
Yes.
If you gap it and go to low energy, do you recover the topological field theory, which is general relativity?
I will not talk about IR. Maybe I don't know.
It's extremely difficult to gap the scalar, and I think it's because calling it a scalar is really a misnomer. It's a scalar-like polarization of the graviton.
But I think maybe Frank would talk more about the IR. Anyway, so so this is the projectable version. So the non-projectable, you still have 7 more couplings and other complications. So even in 2 plus 1, that case is kind of a little bit more complicated. So I will just look at the projectable version. So we want to set up a one loop quantization now of this theory. And we use standard techniques. We use also safety and so on. So background field method with a linear splitting. Now I do a linear splitting of the, also the laps and the shift. And I introduce here some perturbative parameter epsilon. And the quantum fluctuations of the metric, the laps and the shift. It would be useful to set the background laps equal 1 and the background shift equal 0. This doesn't affect any calculation. And it is convenient also to use the traceless decomposition, meaning that I write the spatial metric fluctuations as h hat ij plus the trace term. Well, hat term is traceless. Often the traceless part is also decomposed in transverse and longitudinal components. However, here is further simplification in 2 plus 1 dimension. There are no, especially if I take sphere, there are no transverse components. And if you take higher genus topologies, you have finite dimensional space of fluctuations of transverse tensors. But I will not be interested in that. So I'll consider a sphere as spatial topology. So you have less components in the field, and that's very useful. And well, I still need to gauge fix because the symmetry we were writing before for this foliation preserving diffeomorphism imply for these fluctuation fields the following transformations. And this is gauge symmetry. I want to gauge fix to do the path integral. And one that we will choose is the proper time gauge in which I fix n equal ni equal 0. Note that this is only possible in the projectable case because I have to set this guy, this sum equal 0, so I'm starting with some original n, which is not 0. If this depended on x, since zeta depends only on time, I wouldn't be able to do that. However, I'm considering a projectable model, so I do that. And this gauge fixing produces it comes with a Faddeev Popov determinant, which, however, just is some determinant of the time derivative, and will produce no logarithmic divergences, and only normalizes the cosmological term, totally decoupled from what I'd be interested in. So,
what is the dispersion relation for the scalar?
The what?
Dispersion relation.
Well, you will see the action written for the scalar amount. Yes, just give me that. So there is still a residual symmetry, which is with this zi, the dot is a time derivative. So when I fix this to 0, I'm only fixing the time derivative of zi. So there is the time-independent diffeomorphism on one slice. In canonic analysis, you know this: what you do, you get fixed on one slice, and then the constraints preserve the gauge fixing on all subsequent slices, effectively killing the longitudinal modes of the transverse of the traceless hij. In principle, when you do the covariant path integral, this you don't see this. So and it's one complication more. So here is where the word toy model enters, because I will not integrate over those longitudinal modes. We discard them as approximation that I believe still should capture the physical content of the theory, as these are not degrees of freedom.
That should be
subconsistently
from the BRST approach taking care of
by
the ghosts.
Right? It should, so but it's not. But you see the ghost, when you fix this gauge, I don't really contribute to in a much.
So do you do something else extra here?
I'm that when I write the I only quantize the trace model, so I really throw away this guy. So it's like a conformal reduction that Martin mentioned before. So it's been used even in asymptotic safety, where a priori you have also gravitons. It's not obvious that or that gives some meaningful result. Here, so I used it as an approximation because there was some annoyances in doing that exactly with this term. But I think, as you said, it shouldn't matter in the end. So, however, just to be honest with what, precise about what we're doing, so that's why I say that I'll call this a toy model anyway. And so then, apart from this, then everything goes standard way. So the one loop quantization, which means that now the effective action will be given by that one loop by the total action, the classical action, plus the one loop correction, which is a trace of the log of the second variation of the bare action. The super stands as the S stands for super trace because you have, might have ghosts coming from the further pool of the terminal. But as I said, actually, here I could write just trace because they totally decouple. So then the thing that you need to do to really in order to do carry out the one loop computation is to compute this trace. So this S2 is a functional, it's an operator, and you have to do the trace of this operator. So first thing you need to do in order to carry out this computation is to evaluate this second variation. That is, of course, the standard. You plug in linear splitting and look at the terms of order epsilon squared. What you find is an operator, so a term quadratic in the trace field H with some operator, I already normalized. So you find a certain operator. What I want to do is to fix the time derivative term, which is this one, to have a canonical value 1/2, canonical coefficient 1/2. So that means the epsilon has to be chosen as this in order to achieve that. When you do that, so you find this that epsilon delta 2 has this form with this operator here. And this might answer to your question. So this two time derivative, and there is here you get four time derivatives plus d square r. So this special derivative, covariant special derivative. So you get this operator. And this is an important point. So epsilon is the true perturbative parameter, and as it's a ratio of this kappa, which is roughly the square root of Newton's constant, and lambda minus 1/2 to the power 1/2. Now, to do the trace, you use this trick of the Schwinger representation. You write the log as formally as an integral over proper time in this way, and then you get the trace of the exponential. And the idea is that then the exponential, the trace of the exponential you can evaluate is just the heat kernel expansion, which gives you an expansion of this trace as in terms of in powers of this Schwinger time S, and with some coefficients which are geometrical invariants. However, this, as I said, was formal. You have UV divergences at S equals zero, and what you do, you replace them. You cut off here with the 1 over lambda, which is UV cutoff lambda UV, not the cosmological constant, 1 lambda UV to the fourth. Now this to the fourth because the operator D is a fourth derivative operator, so S is dimension length to the fourth. And you have also, in general, IR divergences up here, so you also who cut off that with some 1 over mu to the fourth. So it's essentially you do an integral just a slice in Schwinger time, which is essentially kind of a Wilsonian. You can think of that as a Wilsonian integration. Well, then you do that, and then you, so this is the formula that you get for the this integral cut off in this way, and you insert here the expansion for the hit kernel, and you get that you easily find that the UV divergences come only from the first three terms of the expansion. So as I'm interested in the UV divergences, I only keep the first three terms, and the rest is convergent. And likely, so what you need at this point is to do the heat kernel expansion. This was in part done before by Baggio, De Boer, and Scheimer. We had to adapt a little bit the calculation because our operator was slightly different. However, that's just the technical part. I spare you. What you get is this coefficient, so it's 0, A1, and A2. And notice that A2 has no R squared term. So you get all the sort of invariants. A0 is just the identity operator, A1 is the Ricci scalar, A2 is contains the kinetic terms pieces, but there's no R squared. Then you plug this in the formula I gave you before, you obtain this, you do the integrals, and so you get quartic divergences, the lambda to the fourth, quadratic divergence, lambda square, and logarithmic divergence. However, well, you could use just dimensional regularization, then you would forget about these guys, but do it or not, in any case, they decouple completely. So this, the divergences I find here are independent of the cosmological term and the topological term. So I will not be interested in looking how those guys renormalize in any case. So notice also that because the measure of the integral is for time having length square dimension, as the dimension 4, so you get classical divergences like in 4 dimensions. Actually, you get 4 quartic, quadratic, and logarithmic divergence, which is unusual for 3D model. So then now we have these divergences, and you just define a renormalized couplings, kappa, lambda, and gamma. Notice that the definition here for gamma is trivial because there was no R square, no divergence proportional to R square. However, kappa renormalizes because of this, so you get a renormalization of gamma. And from here, then you just define usual way beta functions, so which is how the renormalized couplings depend on mu. And what you find, so is this. This is a beta function for kappa, and that's this form. And the beta functions for lambda and for gamma are proportional to the beta function for kappa. So this is an important point. So and then you can solve them, and you find that.
Lambda put about half of the fixed
point. Yeah, I'm coming there. So you can solve them easily. So kappa has this solution. So it's the classical C1 and C2 are integration constants for the three equations. And mu naught is some initial scale. And you get the classical behavior of an asymptotically free coupling. However, as Nyayesh just noticed, so lambda has a fixed point at 1/2 with the, again, with, approached in the UV. And notice that the approach, of course, is the classical one of one loop with 1 over log. And same for gamma, which approaches zero. However, this one is important that it approaches 1/2 with the same speed as kappa approaches zero. So when you take the ratio, which is this effective interaction coupling, this is just a constant. It's totally marginal term. So this coupling is marginal. This is, well, maybe I'll comment on that again. But let me first give some comments here. So the naive expectation you might have of this theory is that at the free field fixed point, you would have a two-parameter family of fixed points parameterized by lambda and gamma, because simply lambda and gamma, as I told you, are dimensionless. So if you go to send kappa to zero, then you obtain just quadratic action. Then you would have these two terms there, and there's no need to send them to zero because there are no mass terms, they are dimensionless. However, what we showed here is that lambda goes to its while invariant value, because I told you at the beginning lambda equal 1 over d was the in general the while invariant case was 1 over d. Here I'm in 2 plus 1, so 1 half is the while invariant value, and lambda and gamma goes to 0. So it's not this type of picture that you might have expected. And this is kind of can understand in some loose analogy. If you think of the scalar field nominally coupled to some curve background, now here you would have say this is the nominal coupling psi, which is dimensionless in 4 dimension, and mass is dimensionful, and at the free field fixed point when lambda equals 0, this you know, so. To have a fixed point, also the mass has to be 0, and you would get you would expect a one parameter family of free field fixed points parameterized by psi. However, if you do the RG computation as we just did, the RG flow prefers the while invariant case with psi equal 1/6. So of course in this case you better see if you take the kind of sick theory with lambda negative, then you have an asymptotically free theory and you get similar behavior. So you start with an interacting theory, and as you go to the UV, the theory flows to psi 1/6. So that's, of course, the analogy ends there. This story, different theory, but I wanted to stress that this generic feature in RG that somehow while invariant, the while invariant cases prefer the fixed point. And however, we still have two marginal ratios, as you notice, this ratio which I showed before, and there's also a ratio gamma over lambda minus 1/2. This is also constant. So you still have somehow two parameter family of fixed points at one loop, but somehow with a different parameterization. What I want to say with my this question here is so how to understand this marginal coupling. I think one aspect is, so we have this kappa will be like asymptotically free going to zero. So however, we have at the same time this lambda going to 1/2, as I said. It's the while invariant case. However, when lambda goes to 1/2 and you have while invariance, you lose also the scalar degree of freedom. Because, as I say, this theory has only one scalar degree of freedom. At the when you have while invariance, this kills the scalar degree of freedom. So you get a reduction of number of degrees of freedom as you approach this value. And typically, when this happens, you get some kind of strong coupling. Meaning that effectively the kinetic term of this guy, which is also read like something like lambda minus 1/2 phi dot square plus interaction terms, this is going to zero. So it's effectively, if you rescale the field, you can put it, say, here, you understand it better, that you get some kind of strong coupling. So it's a bit of a singular limit. And here there seems to be a balance exactly at one loop between asymptotic freedom and strong coupling. And so it's of course it's only one loop, and it has to be seen what happens at two loops or in the full model and so on. It's just an integration. But I take it as a lesson from this toy model computation that we should expect potentially some troubles when you approach fixed points where you have a reduction of number degrees of freedom. And so, yeah, this brings me to my conclusion. Some over time, I leave it there. You can read. Thanks.
the calculation in a different gauge. The reason why I'm asking is actually somewhat important, because I know for sure in 2+1 dimensions at lambda equal to 1, there's an extra global symmetry, which your gauge choice breaks. But that extra global symmetry should protect lambda from getting proof corrected. So lambda equal to 1 should be a protected value by that extra.
Lambda equal 1, yes.
That is not visible in your gauge.
Yes. Indeed, I don't see anything special at lambda equal 1. Yes,
there
that's true.
Be something. So I wonder whether.
Yeah, but I Yes, that's true. But I was not too worried about lambda equal 1 because I was more interested in the UV properties, and I wouldn't expect.
If don't
really know whether that's. You don't know, but yes. That's, yeah. But you would have somehow the same problem.
Because the calculation is by saw that something special happened there, because I know that at that point has an enhanced global symmetry. And so if I'm sitting at that point, I shouldn't see a correction generating it by from that point. I'm protected by it, so it's symmetry.
Unless the theory is strongly coupled, so you wouldn't trust the boundary calculus, which I think might be actually.
Wouldn't trust.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think that that second thing that he was mentioning could happen, but the first thing wouldn't happen. So you have a strongly coupled theory as lambda plus one, because you're getting rid of the scalar again. So you don't trust bundle.
Hard to say. I'm doing a computation.
Other questions? No, then we thank Dario again. Can you go?